VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the VanWee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam VanWee.
It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
Louisa Russeman.
And Dave Russeman.
You loyal listeners out there might remember those voices from last week where we got a really good head start on the topic of cybersecurity. And we all walked out of here saying, you know, there's really a lot more to be said about this. Why don't we do it again next week and we'll kind of wrap up some concepts and give you a little more information. And lo and behold, the luck gods were shining on us or whatever, if I may use that. During the week, Yahoo announced that 500 million people have had their data breached just at Yahoo. There are 7 or so billion people in the world. This is half of 1 billion being affected by this one item. So I was thinking along the way, driving out here today, who's not involved in cybersecurity? Who's not at risk? And I got thinking about every individual with a computer, a bank account, a credit card, all the places that take them. I decided it would be easier to identify people who are not subject to this, only I couldn't think of any. So I guess I'd have to say this is a universal problem, and that's why we're doing something about it. And when you hear about this thing like the Yahoo breach, so I got the email right away of 2 Yahoo accounts. It says, change your passwords, delete your security questions, and go to two-step and all that stuff. And we'll talk about those things. But if you don't think it can happen to you, you are wrong. You're dead wrong. And once they get a piece of information, it could be over. All right, well, what are we doing here? As usual on Saturday morning, we are live. I remind everybody that not every financial radio show is created equal. Most of them are pre-recorded. You get to listen to what they want you to listen to and nothing else. But you can control the editorial content here very simply by picking up the phone and dialing 222-TALK. That's 222-8255, area code 904, and callers will immediately go to the head of the line, as always, because that's the rules. I made them, and I pay for them, and I stick to them. I have a trivia question this week brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888, and it's about brand loyalty. A lot of people know that Samsung Galaxy Note 7 phones have been known to start fires and are blowing up, and they've issued a recall on them. You can do one of a couple things, but for right now, a lot of people are turning them in. At least for now. So let's say half of them, which is about right, about half of the galaxies have been turned in. Now, out of the people who have turned them in, what percentage are asking for a refund? That's a number that you probably will not get right away because this is a pretty serious problem. But I'm going to tell you right now, there's pretty good brand loyalty out there in the Samsung world. Not maybe as much as those of us who are iPhone crazy, but there's still good loyalty. People have their preferences, and they like to stick to them. So what percentage of the people turning in their phones so far are actually asking for their money back? All right, we have another okay week in the market. Didn't end very well, but got off to a good start, and that made up for everything. It was brought to you by the Janet Yellen Smackdown and the idiots at the Bank of Japan, both of which we will talk about a little bit. But first off, Adam, why don't you tell everybody what happened?
Yeah, despite the letdown on Friday, it actually was a pretty nice week that really didn't come as a surprise, as we pretty much told you they weren't going to raise rates this week, and lo and behold, they did not. So equities, of course, love that. And actually, everything loved that this week. It was pretty much a broad-based rally, for at least for Wednesday and Thursday. And then Friday, we had a pullback. But we ended the week up about 138 points or on the Dow, or 0.8%. Well, the NASDAQ and the S&P added about 1.2%. The NASDAQ is now positive for the month of September, and it even hit an all-time high this week. But the Dow and the S&P are both still slightly negative, but it's by less than 1%. So all in all, for September, if we can hold this through next week, that is not a bad month.
Nope.
The U.S. wasn't the only place celebrating easy monetary policy this month, as Japan and Europe both reacted well to their respective Fed decisions. In fact, the broad-based rally really didn't leave anything out, including fixed income products. Everything kind of rallied this week, so not a bad week. Silver went up the most out of commodities, posting a gain of about 4.6%.
Oil had to get the smile off my face.
Yeah, you might have a little bit of that, don't you?
A little bit.
Yep. Oil had the most volatile week, with Monday through Thursday showing four straight days of gains. Friday was not as kind, with those gains essentially cut in half. It dropped about 3.5% after a run-up of over 7%. So still, if you had owned oil on Monday morning, you had a pretty good week. Oil is kind of stuck in a downward trend, while gas seems to be heading the other way. Demand is really high right now, especially for this week of the year. After the Labor Day holiday, it tends to decline, but that did not happen this week. And the inventory numbers are decreasing faster than expected on the gas side and the oil side. So with demand high and inventory falling, all in all, oil looks okay right now. I would definitely be a buyer rather than a seller at this point.
Yeah, we're not quite into the sweet zone yet, which means I think there's a little upside. Not enough companies are making enough money at current price, which is, again, under 45 after trying to stay above it. But I think right in the 50 to 60 zone longer term, we can probably hold it with the balance of production between us and the OPEC and Russia and all that. So I'm looking for oil to go a little higher, gasoline to go a little higher. But I don't think we're going to get any of the old shock days just yet.
No, and I agree with that. I think you should look for the oil price to level out somewhere right below where it would make sense to go back to fracking.
And yeah, exactly.
That's kind of the price point that I'm looking for. The economic news was pretty light this week, with 12 reports released. Five of those beat expectations, six missed, and one had no target. Next week is a lot busier, with 25 reports being released for the end of the quarter. A lot of this week's data was focused on housing, and it was kind of all over the place. The home builder sentiment came in way higher than expected at 65 versus an expected 59. On a regional basis, the South and the West are trending up, while the Northeast is really lagging and the Midwest is pretty flat. Despite that good news in housing, housing starts and building permits both disappointed, but not by very wide margins. Existing home sales also reported this week, and it showed a sizable drop to 5.33 million annualized, much of which can be explained by a lack of inventory right now, which is kind of interesting. There are a lot of buyers out there, but not as many sellers as you would expect in a rising price house market.
Yeah, problem is people don't have any money.
And once
thanks
again,
thanks Obama.
I'm sounding like a broken record, but another one of the bright spots in the data this week was jobless claims. The expectation was for 261,000, but the actual number came in at 252,000.
And what's happening on Monday?
I'm not sure.
The first debate.
Okay.
Of course you're going to get a good number this week. It's your last chance before Monday.
And lastly, the manufacturing PMI fell from 52 to 51.4 this month, but that's a number that still indicates expansion. So all in all, mixed news this week, I would say. Not great, not bad.
No, but certainly nothing to raise rates over for the reasons that they purportedly raise rates when they do. The Yellen smackdown was real easy. There were three Fed officials that said that they would rather raise rates, and she looked them all in the eye and said, "You're out of here anyway. You guys are short timers, so we're going to do it my way." Bank of Japan decided they're going to engage in what they call yield curve control. I have another name for yield curve control. I call it market manipulation. These people have to be dumb as stumps. When you've done something for 20 years and it keeps getting worse, and they do more of it thinking it'll start getting better, as we said earlier, that's the definition of insanity. That's the world we live in, folks. Don't buy bonds in the Bank of Japan. All right, still got the trivia question out there, but we got to take a hard break, and we'll get to Dave and Louisa and cybersecurity right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Louisa Russin.
And Dave Russin.
And we are going to dive into the cybersecurity and what it means to you situation, the ever-growing, ever more invasive situation. And I'm telling you from personal experience with clients of ours, when you get your identity stolen and when you file your tax return and they say, I'm sorry, we already sent your refund, it is not a good day for you. It is preventable. Get an IRS PIN number. If you are in Florida or Georgia or Washington, D.C., you can get one for asking. If you're outside those three jurisdictions, then you have to have a reason or at least a good line. But you don't need to, people of Jacksonville. You can just get a hold of the IRS and get a security ID PIN number, and no one will be stealing your refund. How about that for good news, huh? I'll remind everybody of the trivia question brought to you by First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. Brand loyalty in Samsung is very good, even though they had this horrendous problem this week and about half of the Galaxy Note 7 phones have been turned in. What percentage of them are asking for a refund versus simply waiting until they get the problem fixed? So it is not a really big number. I'll give you that much of a hint. I'll tell you what. I'm going to narrow it down. It's under 50%, but it's over zero. Now, there's your bracket, folks. You can't tell me I didn't make it easy. All right, we're going to dig in. We're going to start with, by the way, let's do it in this order. Tell them who we are. You tell them who you are, and then we're going to get into your topic. How's sure. that?
We can do that. We are fee-only financial planners located in Jacksonville Beach. We're right off the Marsh Landing Boulevard exit from Butler Boulevard, so we're very easy to reach from all points in the city. You can find us online at www.vanweefinancial.com. And we do a blog on our website as well as post our old shows. So anytime you miss a show, just go to our website and either by Monday or Tuesday of the following week, it's up there commercial free. So you can download it, put it on your phone, listen to it in the car with no commercial breaks. Kind of nice. And we're also on Facebook at facebook.com/VanWeeFinancial and Twitter at VanWeeFinancial. And if you're a person who doesn't like to call radio shows, but you have a question to ask, you can always just email us at info@VanWeeFinancial.com and we will either answer your question on air or get back to you via email.
All right. And now we'll hear from the Box Made Up people. And that is a funny name. It's the first thing we all think of. And we went through last week how they got it. And that doesn't really matter. What matters is that you can find them if you need some technology consulting. We've been using them now for pushing 2 years and have been extremely happy. They're very professional, very thorough. But more important, they're very tailored. Different people, different companies have different needs, different types of backup, different types of how fast you have to do things. They'll tailor it to you so you're not spending any more money than you have to, nor are you cutting corners where you shouldn't be.
Right.
So let's take it away to Louisa and David, and we'll let them talk a little bit about the mess that Yahoo has created.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for that introduction. And, you know, and Stephen really was exact there. Boxmeda, we are about customized IT. No two solutions look alike. It's about going in, assessing the business, growth plans, industry requirements, and then creating a plan for you. Boxmeda, we're an outsourced IT company, which means that we manage your IT on a day-to-day basis. We monitor it and make sure that everything is stable, secure, and that you are following best practices.
And what's your motto? The one I love?
Stress-free IT.
You got it.
That's right. We answer the phone every time. So if you are having a problem, you pick up the phone and you call and somebody always answers. Don't you hate it when you have a problem and, you know, you're in that moment of panic and you call and you get voicemail? I mean, that's, you know.
Like the IRS?
No, exactly. Nobody likes that. And at Boxmeda, we don't like that either. So you call, you get a person every time. We have a range of expertise, everything from administration to engineering and everything in between. So we've got the knowledge. And we're not only just a service company, but we're a consulting organization as well. So if you do have an IT department, we work with your IT department to fill in on projects or where they may need some additional resources. So
phone number and email?
229-0922. And email is info@boxmeta.com.
Thank you. All right. Yahoo made a big, big, big blunder. When and what does it mean and what are we doing about it? Take it away.
I'll let you take it.
David?
Well, from a customer standpoint, obviously change your password if you have a Yahoo account. You should have received an email.
I did, so I know that that part is working.
You know, notifying you, but if you haven't checked or, you know, lost it in spam, who knows it these days. You know, verify that you're not using that password anywhere else that you used previously at Yahoo that might have been compromised. And at the same time, change your password. Update any security settings that you may have answered that they've requested you change. And also, I would recommend it turn on two-factor authentication.
And can you explain to some people who are maybe not quite as computer savvy exactly what that means?
Two-factor simply means you have an alternate way of authenticating yourself in addition to your password. For the Yahoo sake, I believe it's SMS. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure entirely how Yahoo does it.
I put it on in reaction to this on my own Yahoo account.
So you enter your cell phone. So every time you log in from a new device, they will all double authenticate you from your cell phone by texting you a code, which you will have to enter.
And if that code doesn't get sent back,
yeah,
nobody gets
no
in,
access
right?
granted. Perfect. So, you know, in general, any site that you use for anything critical, you know, confidential, has any information that you feel you wouldn't want compromised, you should turn on two-factor. Most, you know, reliable vendors these days have some sort of two-factor authentication mechanism, whether it's Google authentication or some app you put on your cell phone or an SMS text. So that's generally the best practice you should do. I know Google, the Microsofts, you know, the Yahoos, they all support it. Maybe not, you haven't maybe have enabled it, but you should. You
but
should do
there.
That right away.
Yeah, it's a free app. The Authenticator is a free app that you can get on your cell phone.
Mm-hmm. As far as the hack goes, you have to realize now that your email address is now in the hands of, you know, potentially malicious intent. So you're most likely going to start receiving messages now with phishing attacks, with tricking you from friends, maybe if they've seen your address book or people you've previously sent to. It'll appear to come from people you know. So you have to be even more aware now of the risks that are out there.
And let me just interject there very quickly, because people that I've spoken to, a person's email does not need to be hacked in order for a hacker to send you a message to try to trick you. They
Correct.
Can right. So your friend's email doesn't have to be hacked in
they
order for you
spoof.
To they spoof the address. So
it's very easy to make it appear to have come from someone you know when it really didn't. And, you know, usually if you have a good spam filter, it'll kind of alert you of that fact.
Is this worth getting a new email account? And phasing out your old one?
It's really up to you. I mean, obviously, if you want to start over, it's safer. But then most people would probably have how many accounts linked to that email address.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might shop at, you know, Amazon or some other websites, and they're all linked to your Yahoo account, and that's where all your receipts go and your purchase orders and your, you know, tracking numbers. And
I started that process, and you're right, it's very complicated.
So I don't know if I'd go through that pain. I would at least change my password, get a good password manager. We talked about that.
Yahoo suggested to me as part of this mass you've been breached thing that I just stop using security questions. What are your thoughts on that?
There's been some new studies out that pretty much show they're pointless. Most people make those answers easily recoverable in a sense, like where did you go to high school or what was your first car? And they're easy to guess, and a lot of people use things that are on their Facebook page.
Yeah, I was going to say they go to your Facebook,
you know,
page,
so,
learn all the answers.
Or your LinkedIn account. Or yeah. So if it's publicly available, it's not a good question. So they've pretty much, you know, through studying that it doesn't matter. You should
and on
have
that-
a password manager, use unique passwords per site, and, you know, follow the best practices
and,
out there.
And similar to that, actually, NIST just came out a few months ago as well, and they said that even changing your password frequently is not as important as having a complex password. So
you actually mentioned that last mm-hmm. week. Yeah. I was kind of taken aback by that.
People are more likely to have or create a more complex password if they know that they don't have to change it. Once you know that you have to change it every 90 days, you get lazy and you say, let me just throw something together.
Good point.
But if you know, hey, this is going to be here to stay, then you're going to use, okay. And one of the things we talk about is don't just use a word or just even random letters, create a phrase. And now when you create phrases, you can now implement characters and you can actually use different strategy that's much more difficult to crack. And if you know that that's not going to change, you're going to be more likely to do that. And don't use the same password for every site. And that goes back to this Yahoo breach, so.
Yeah, I actually took that advice. I got it from you folks, but not on the show. But I went to one of my more protective sites, I guess, and did actually use a phrase. And I never realized, I guess, that you could have a password that long.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But if you're going to have one that long, how great is it to have one that you can remember?
Right.
That is that long.
Yep.
But that was kind of a unique approach to me. Okay, well, after the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about very specific things that you can do both personally and as a small business, because there's a lot of responsibility out there for everyone now. In fact, right before the show opened, we were talking about some stupid things that people do with their credit cards and their debit cards. And debit cards are just a tragedy in this life, I think. We're going to talk about that first. All right, don't go away. We'll be right back after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Sure.
Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
Louisa Russeman.
And Dave Russeman.
And we have been talking a bit about cybersecurity, but I have a couple of things. First, the trivia question of the week. What percentage of people who have returned their Samsung Galaxy Note 7 phones have asked for a refund? That's a study in brand loyalty. Also, this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. The things are growing this year like I have never seen them growing before, so give Troy a call at 662-9794. All right, we have been subjected, we the people of the world have been subjected to this tremendous Yahoo data breach, and that it wasn't, we didn't do the show because of that. That didn't happen because we were doing this show, but it was a tremendous coincidence, and I'm not big on coincidence, but it worked. And it does show you how important all this stuff is. So during the break, we were all sitting around talking about things from sort of an order of stupidity. Number one, let's go right to the top. Talk about debit cards. Debit cards are awful, 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 awful things. If you have one, cut it in pieces, throw it away, burn it, do something. If your kids have one, get it back.
Especially.
People, don't be afraid of credit cards, but be deathly afraid of debit cards. Tell us a little more, if you would.
We were talking at the break. There is some false sense of security, I think. People think that the FDIC will protect me. Well, no, the FDIC is there to protect the bank against liquidity. The FDIC is not there to protect you if your email account got hacked and somebody was able to reset your bank password and take your money. There might be some exceptions, credit unions and such, or some other private organizations may have, some insurance or some recourse. But in a broad sense, your bank is not covered. So what can you do? I mean, one of the things we talked about here as well is isolate your funds. Anything that is going to be for a transactional nature, create an account that is just for those funds. It could be in the same bank account. I mean, in the same bank, but just a different account. Ideally, a different bank altogether would be great, but we understand, obviously, that's the next step. So there are ways to insulate yourself, and like Stephen said, debit cards are, you know, you give your debit card away, you hand it off to somebody in a restaurant, or if it's breached, it's direct access to your funds, and it's unlike a credit card where you have recourse. So this is one of the things that you can do.
What about sites like PayPal?
PayPal have their own security statements, and so, I mean, I know that we had, you know, one incident a couple of years ago, and I've known several people that have had PayPal breaches, and they've always recovered their funds within just a few days. So PayPal, I think, similar to credit cards, they have...
PayPal usually will guarantee their transactions.
Okay, right? So if you link your bank account and send someone money and somehow that's breached, they have some insurance type that will
exactly.
get your money back.
But still, I would recommend that if you're going to link an account to PayPal, make it an account that you've isolated just for online transactions. Do not have your major checking or savings account linked to PayPal, because you never know, PayPal could get breached.
Mm-hmm.
So this way, they're only accessing the funds that you use for that transaction. So if you need to buy something from PayPal and transfer $500 to that account, make the payment, and this way you only have your $500 at risk. If you're going to link to your major bank account, you know, that's insane. Like he said, you shouldn't be doing that.
And you were just telling us that you had a little personal experience with an online gaming site.
Yes, for those of you
okay,
that have
parents,
teenagers out there.
Listen.
My 16-year-old, you know, credit card, so, you know, limited risk, I guess. So I gave him my credit card to use on his Steam account. And I'm sure for all of you parents out there with teenagers, you're very familiar with Steam. It is a gaming platform. And so what they were tricking kids, basically, that as they were playing the game, they were incurring transaction costs for whatever, I don't know, buying some sort of, you know, I guess if they would use a certain feature or use a certain whatever, I don't know. There were these charges that were being incurred and they never knew. And so we get the bill and it's $400 and some odd one day. And I call my son down and I'm not very happy. And he says, Mom, I have no idea what this is.
They didn't tell me.
He says, I don't know. He goes, I really don't know where these charges are coming from or why. I didn't authorize anything on the game. And so we called Steam, and of course, it's a black hole. You can't find anybody, and for, you know, so there's nothing to do there. So I called American Express, and they reversed it. But lesson learned is that now my son, there's no more credit card on his Steam account. He goes to Walgreens on his own with his money, and he buys himself $50 prepaid cards as he needs them, and he puts those into the game. So,
all right, let's talk in general about parents. If you have a kid in college or are considering sending a kid to college, what are you going to do? You want the kid to have some access. It's absolutely necessary to have a kid have some access. How do you protect yourself?
I mean, I think I'll let Dave talk about it, but I think it's everything we've already kind of covered here is create an account just for him that you only fund with a very limited
credit card.
No debit cards.
I believe in credit cards. I mean, I was in college a long time ago, but, you know, they have minimums. They usually have programs for college students. They may not have a high credit limit, but they're enough to get by, you know, and if parents pay the bill, so they'll still have, say, a $500, $750 rotating credit line, which, you know, in college when it's $4 pizza and
yeah, so they,
you know, you can get far on that, you know.
When your card gets declined at 3 a.m. when the pizza guy comes.
that $4 pizza is probably now $8.
But. That's right,
yeah,
that's right.
But, I mean, there's always deals for college students, right? So, but, yeah, I mean, I think if you get them a basic credit card, get their credit history started, I personally believe that's the right way to go.
And you are
avoid debit cards.
Yeah, you are fans of the prepaid credit card, right?
Yes.
Sure, yeah. I know American Express does I think they do a student card. It's like $500, and it's not a credit card, though.
And incidentally.
But it's due it every month.
Yeah, incidentally, on cards like that. That's really good for developing a credit history.
Mm-hmm.
If you teach a kid how to use a prepaid card and the kid's responsible, it shows credit and payment, credit and payment, credit mm-hmm. and payment. A lot of kids come out of college. They basically don't exist from the mm-hmm. credit mm-hmm. files. What happens, you go to try to buy a car, buy a home or something like that, they look at you and say, who are you?
Yeah, there's
right.
no history.
Everything's so, under mom. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Adam, what do you do? What did you do in college? Do you remember?
I had the only credit card I had was a gasoline card. So okay. That wasn't real useful outside of the gas station. And I had a debit card. I didn't really use it. My job at the time, I bartended, so I made a lot of cash, and I just paid for everything in cash. That was the easiest way to do it.
Plus, you're just old enough now, and I'll remind everybody that he has a big birthday coming up pretty soon. He's just...
I don't want to think about that.
He's just old enough that this issue wasn't nearly as prevalent because there wasn't internet everywhere you went. There weren't smartphones in everybody's pocket. Nowadays, you can get your pocket picked without anybody picking your pocket. That's the weird part. They just do it electronically.
Very true. I mean, I think that's a good entry point into maybe if we wanted to go into public Wi-Fi a little bit and just...
That's a very good point.
And using mobile devices, which are no longer just something that you hold in your hand. I mean, now we're all walking around with, you know, these smartwatches and, you know, all the wristbands and all the other gadgets that are connected to your mobile devices. So you are sort of like a walking signal. And, you know, you just kind of bounce around and you jump from public Wi-Fi to public Wi-Fi. So I'll let Dave talk about that, but we can't emphasize strong enough, just similar to what we're saying about, you know, debit cards and just avoid public Wi-Fi as much as possible, except for just truly casual type purposes. So Dave, talk about public Wi-Fi a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it's everywhere.
We pretty much recommend to our clients that if you're going to use Wi-Fi, you know, you bring it with you. Make sure it's something you brought with you, you know, a hotspot on your cell phone, a separate hotspot, or something that you trust. If it's free, you don't know if it's actually that place that put that up. There could be someone sitting in the airport with a rogue Wi-Fi that just says, you know, Jacksonville Airport.
You have no idea.
And then you connect, and now you're on their Wi-Fi, and they're capturing all the data going through their access point in your device.
There's keyboard readers. They can read what you're typing on your keyboard.
So there's a lot of scary things out there, and, you know, we can go nitty-gritty into little details, but in general, just avoid public Wi-Fi unless it's absolutely necessary.
And yet nobody does that. What happens when you go to Starbucks? Everybody's in the Starbucks.
Somebody could be in the parking lot and make it look like you're connected to Starbucks Wi-Fi, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing in hotels, and we'll talk about that,
too. It's not as uncommon as you think.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right, well, we've got to take another break, and then we'll come back. We're going to talk a little bit more. We'll try to get into some small business stuff that's important to people like me. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And Louisa Russman. I'm
and
sorry
Dave
about
Russman.
Yeah, I got her deep in thought over the break. All right, I'm going to give everybody a lesson in economics and journalism here in one easy lesson. I'm going to be the first. I'm ahead of the curve, folks, in every way, shape, or form. I'm going to tell you that the predictions for Christmas sales are going to be rotten this year.
Until after Christmas.
I beat him. Adam and I have a contest to see who predicts that earlier every year, because that's the way it works.
It's always
folks.
The same narrative. Don't be surprised.
All right, trivia question. What percentage of people who've returned their Samsung phones are asking for a refund? It's not a very big number. They are. It's a great company, let's face it. And the people have brand loyalty, as they should. Just like we have to Apple, other people have to Samsung. All right, we're talking about security breaches, and this one we were talking about in the break. This one blew my mind. The new Trojan horse. Tell us about that. We're talking about small business. This is such a classic.
I love the keyboard.
The keyboard.
Yeah, there's apparently the wireless keyboards out there, the non-Bluetooth ones specifically. There's several of them that are vulnerable to radio frequency, so you can predict based on, I guess, frequency. I don't know the technical details, but they're able to identify the keystrokes that you're typing. So there's compromises out there that have been Trojan horses sent in, say, flower deliveries in a vase, and they have a little device in it, and it picks up keystrokes from the keyboards. So
no flower deliveries to the office. That's it.
That's just nuts.
And, you know, if governments do it more in appliances, like they will intercept items from customs and modify them. And if it plugs into the wall, say a printer or something, well, now it's got power and it might have a radio in it or something, so it can run for as long as need be.
It's unbelievable.
So there's some crazy devices out there.
The real estate people were talking on the show ahead of ours about the trouble people go through to defraud mortgage holders and things like that. And I was thinking, listening to it on the way in, if all that energy and talent could be harnessed for good causes, well, people
imagine
like
what
that,
we could do. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're inventing something where they take it into the office like it's a basket of flowers and it's got 30 days of keyboard stealing in it and they're doing key logging and get everything out of it.
Yeah.
And what kind of genius, evil genius, is that? And couldn't we redirect it?
China? No, I don't know.
It's just, it blows my mind. Yeah, well, anyway, Adam was asking Luis and David about what makes them different / better than other people. You go, the term I used after our brief chat was weak link theory or weakest link theory. And tell us what that means, if you would.
Absolutely. I'll start it off. You know, network security and process, it is just that. It's an entire process. It's not just one thing. It's not just
not a piece of hardware.
It's not just a piece of hardware. You know, Dave's analogy is I can put the best lock on the door, but if I leave it open, it doesn't matter. So that's the weakest link theory. And so Boxmeda's approach is about it's a full process. So yes, we come in and we implement the best network security for your business. And it's everything from the firewall. Well, how do I recover? And what's my retention requirement? So that if my, you know, a staff member or somebody might do something, not intentionally, obviously, but if something should happen, well, then how do I recover? Or what's my plan? So it's what you do on the front end, but it's also what you do on the back end. And it's around education. It's around what we do on a day-to-day basis. Our staff is in the office every day, constantly checking metrics, checking reports. We're checking your antivirus, which is managed in a centralized way. So we've got a dashboard that shows us constantly what's happening on your network. So it's really a process that's not just to set it and forget it, but it's set it, monitor it, watch it, change it as needed, consult with your client, educate, have have cyber meetings. I'm always in the offices of clients, you know, even when I'm on the phone, just talking to them about something that may not even be related. If the opportunity comes up, you know what, talk about whatever you think is critical, you know, maybe something new has come up. So it's just this constant education. So it's around process. One of the examples of that might be is, and I know we've done that for Van Wee, is USB devices, flash devices. Okay. Lock down your flash, you know, your USB ports on your computers. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest...
Something I never would have thought of.
That's it. I mean, it's not uncommon. If you were to find a USB flash drive, and by you, I mean, maybe you're an employee of company XYZ.
Yeah, want to see if there's anything on it or if it's free to use.
65 or 70% of people that find a flash drive in the parking lot of their company will plug that flash drive into their computer. Now, how easy is it to grab a logo of a company that's in that building?
The number actually goes up if you put a logo.
If you put a logo on it, it's like 98% of people will grab a flash drive and put it into their computer. Now, your staff member wasn't doing anything maliciously. They thought they were being a good Samaritan. Hey, let me go find who this belongs to and give it back to them.
It might be pictures of their kids. You know,
exactly,
they lost forever.
Exactly. So that's just an example of, again, the process and things that you can do. Email phishing. And I'll let Dave go into the whole... I mean, we can do an entire show on just phishing alone.
Well, in general, I mean, just to sort of start over somewhat, we do an entire risk assessment. So...
Well, and that's something that we did this year
with you guys.
Right, we did an audit. Yep.
Yeah, we're going to do an annual security audit. We document it. Being in the financial business, this has become a big deal for the compliance people.
Yeah, FINRA and SEC.
But even if it doesn't matter to FINRA or SEC, you should do this in your own business. Mm-hmm. I don't care what kind of business it is.
Yep.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Carry on.
Yeah, we do a complete risk assessment catered to your business. You know, some environments might have different requirements, but in general, it covers most of the areas that you would expect, like physical security, you know, controls on data. You shouldn't have the entire office have access to every file on the network. How do people access machines remotely? You know, what data leaves the building on laptops? Are you encrypting those things or should you be? And we go through all those steps from front to back. I mean, we have a whole giant checklist of things we check. But in general, you have to kind of do that initially because you'll have a lot of aha moments, you know, and maybe you're putting client data on a website. Some companies like yours have client portals. Mm-hmm. Log in and look at your financial data. Well, have you tried to see how easy it is to compromise that website and get in. Have you done a penetration test? Have you done a risk assessment on that environment? So it, where I might have another business that's a nonprofit, they don't really have that. So we don't do that piece. So it's case by case, but in general, risk assessment, do you have an incident response process and procedure? You will have an attempt at a breach. You will get a ransomware email. Somebody might click on it.
I think we have 5 minutes left. Why don't we go into ransomware a little bit?
So yeah, ransomware is topic. Yep. Ransomware is the most common thing we see today. It's very easy to get an email from someone.
Just tell people what it is briefly.
Briefly, they encrypt the data on your network. And they
usually through email, or it could be a flash
usually
drive.
Usually through an email, a link, or a document, or a website. Almost all the time, it involves someone clicking on something they shouldn't have opened. So it'll encrypt your data and it'll hold it ransom for usually bitcoins. We've had several clients do that on their home computers. We've had a couple do that internally, even after going through cybersecurity seminars. So
these emails are so
they're very sophisticated.
They're so sophisticated.
So that leads into you should have very good backup and recovery of your data, because I believe that it's very easy for ransomware to get in.
Is it usually just data they steal, or do they just lock you down?
They don't steal it. They just encrypt it, so it's useless. And
they padlock it.
Most small businesses, you know, bigger, larger firms tend to have recovery systems in place. They may not be ideal, but most smaller businesses think that, you know, oh, I have it. It's got on a drive on my, you know, USB drive or a hard drive. And that gets encrypted as well because it's attached to the computer. They got infected. So they essentially lose their file system and their backups. Hmm. So you need to have offsite backups. And I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do it. But in general, you have to have a valid backup recovery and retention plan. How far back do I need to go and be able to recover? And that's where most companies lack in the small business space.
And that's the case with ransomware. That's your best defense is, okay, well, hey, you know, I'm being held ransom for Bitcoin, but hey, I've got a backup from last night. Forget the Bitcoin. I'm just going to recover from last night and I'm free to go.
You still need to do the other security measures, you know, firewalls, antivirus, things like that.
But with regard to phishing, the last thing I'll say, local company, Landstar, the employee received an email from who she thought was a business owner or business manager requesting W-2s of all of the staff. She thought it was a legitimate email because it looked like it came from her boss, and she sent off every single W-2 for all 1,500 employees. So.
And I can imagine that she wasn't feeling real good about that.
No.
Either. You know, it's not that people do things like that intentionally.
No.
There's no maliciousness to all of this stuff. All right. Well, thanks again. I've got to give an answer here. Out of all the people with the Samsung phones with the problems, the half of them have taken them back. Only 10% of those people actually want a refund. 90% are remaining loyal. I think that's fantastic. I would like to think that every little business like yours and ours would have that kind of customer client loyalty, and I know for sure that we do. Thanks for listening, folks. Thanks again to Box Meta. Come back next week.